Hello, Gemini and Gemini Rising. Welcome to In These Times, your 2019 autumn reading. My name is Eric, and I'll be hanging out with you in your astrology for a little bit. I'm beginning all of these readings with an invocation from my modest foray into Tibetan Buddhism, which has gone on for a while, you might say inadvertently, through some of the artwork and tantric work that I do. But then I recently made a few visits to the monastery up in Woodstock, and on one of them I found this book about the bardo, which is kind of like the lost chapter of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And it's a modern work, so it hasn't been filtered through imperialist China. And the author, Kenpo Karthar Rinpoche, wrote something that I found to be genuinely spiritually refreshing. Like, it woke me up in a way, and I have felt better since encountering this idea, and I want to pass it along in that spirit. He says, as bad as times are, the Dharma is not affected or diminished in any way. We do indeed live in an age of decadence, but Dharma is not decadent. The Dharma is the same as it's always been. And he continues, kind of giving an example. The land of Tibet has suffered greatly throughout the preceding century. And yet all that has happened there, all that has brought great suffering to people and has greatly diminished practice resources, i.e., you know, temples and the ability to practice one's spirituality, has not affected the power or the authenticity of Dharma in any way. The compassion of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and their blessings are utterly unaffected by the circumstances of the times we live in. The Dharma is always effective, and it will always work. You simply have to do it. So when I say in these times, I do mean in these times that seem so decadent and where it is so challenging to orient psychologically and emotionally and many other ways in a stable way. The environment seems to be changing. People are weird. There's so much, bobbing and weaving and dodging intimacy. And then at the same time, people self-report that they're so lonely and feel isolated, and you don't have to wait too long for an article about sexless marriages to come up on your newsfeed, and there's a lot of other things going on that are just separating people from one another. But I think more significantly, separating people from themselves. And from the look of your solar chart, it would seem that you are seeking some solid ground to stand on, and that it's not easy to find that solid ground, and that you may be therefore willing to seek yourself any way that you can that feels tangible. And these things may be a distraction. And so I want to describe what comes up as the two most readily available and accessible ways for you to make some connection to the reality that surrounds you. And to do this, I'm going to read from the two most active signs in the zodiac in the long run right now, which are Aries and Capricorn. Aries is now the home of Chiron, and Chiron's making a conjunction to a point called Salacia. Then there's also Eris in Aries. The whole Aries realm is usually pretty easy to find. And for you, it's the realm of the public. It's outside of your house, social networks, and also anything involving the internet. So that would work on any level of social interchange. It's a very important let's say, horizon for you to explore there. But it's troubled right now because the social realm is troubled, and it's a little like the First Amendment equivalent of everybody in the United States having guns. Suddenly, we all woke up one day and everyone had the power of NBC News to, produce and distribute live videos, to write something and reach thousands of people, which is a whole new thing. This was a privilege reserved for the rarefied few until very recently. And so there's a lot of confusion and contorting of society because this has done weird things to us as people. All right, so that's thing one. Aries, out in the 11th house, a social reality that is easy to slip into and to slip away from yourself, though ultimately this is going to be one of the most important places that you find yourself. Thing two is the Capricorn realm. And for you, the Capricorn realm is the 8th place from your sign. So if we start with Sun Gemini or Rising Gemini, count 8 places, you land in Capricorn, and that associates the sign and energy field of Capricorn with all things related to the 8th house, the house where money, power, secrets, and sex are exchanged. So it's this deep, intimate angle of, let's say, psychic reality that almost always happens in the realm of deep interpersonal relationships. And for a while, you have been confronted with the power of other people. This went on all through the Pluto and Sagittarius era. That began in the began in 1995, transitioning from 94, and then takes hold. Pluto takes hold in Sag in late 1995, and that goes on for about 95 to 08, about 13 years, and Pluto takes hold in Capricorn. Both of these are Pluto, in a sense, dominating your relationship angle. And so this is, when Pluto is in your relationship angle, you're getting a look and a feel for and a sense of the kinds of power that other people might have over you, and it can get frustrating. Now, there's more going on, but Pluto has really dominated this quadrant for more than 20 years. So that's either all of your adult life or a huge chunk of your adult life, or who knows, maybe even most of your life in total. And Pluto's about to reach its peak of action in Capricorn. Saturn is also there. There's going to be a conjunction. And this is the description of the way in which your most intimate relationships, which include some familial relationships, through in-laws, are changing. The whole structure of the way that you think about relationships is changing and being rearranged, and you are being rearranged along with it, as are all of your modalities of connection to other people. This whole realm is completely being kind of descripted and re-scripted, and it's connected with all of this publishing power, digital publishing power that people have. So the configuration of what a person is, sorry to use a computer term, the arrangement, how about a musical term, of what a person is being rearranged by all of this hyperbolic overexposure. I mean, we just don't get how overwhelming it is to have to stay tethered to the internet all the time. And in the process, many people are just forgetting how to have a conversation or how to feel confident enough when someone asks them a question that goes off script. And this, in turn, is making a really big shakeup in society. And it just turns out that both of these come in to your life at angles that strongly influence your relating to others and all your ideas about relating to others, and that there is in one context a power issue. Now, we are being pelted with points of view about the power issue, and it's almost like there's like a kind of the Special Olympics of the disempowered who await their turn to claim oppression of some kind. And what is utterly troubling is that the whole conversation about this is focused on the supposed causes of oppression, and a lot of hand-wringing about what we're supposed to do about them, and nearly no conversation at all about self-actualization, self-awareness, growth process. So the entire cosmology of oppression, let's just, like, any time that concept comes up, seems to be woefully lacking even the meekest hint that there are self-actualization resources that exist outside of the political discussion, that are much more intimate, they're personal, they're contained in perhaps in therapy environments, they're contained in the places where people are just doing their best to work out a relationship with others. Right? Because we hear over and over again that there is all of this oppression, and yet what's really going on is that we humans are pretty much all we've got, and that we're doing our best to work it out with one another. And I realize there's this viewpoint that that to politicize the whole thing and to turn it into a thing about the nature of society and to blame half of society for the problems of the whole society, as if one or the other just disembark a UFO and didn't exist previously. It didn't come from anywhere. Nothing made people the way they are, right? We all just disembarked a UFO yesterday. Well, no. We've all come a long distance, and we are trying to work it out. And I would propose that one of the very most significant things, messages coming through your astrology, is about an increasingly conscious need to work out your relationships with people. To not dominate or be dominated or even have concepts like domination and oppression and all of this stuff, but just to work it out and to call it like you see it and listen to others in response to what you say when you call it like you see it. And just because you call it like you see it doesn't make you right. It does say that you're coming from a viewpoint, and that viewpoint may be more or less grounded in reality, more or less helpful as a tool. But part of working it out is seeing where other viewpoints intersect with your own, and when you mix them, what do you get? What's the result? And does that give you some mutual territory to work things out? So from the look of your astrology, it is possible that you feel like you're often trampled in some way. And I would encourage you to acknowledge that if that's what you're feeling. Really acknowledge it if that's what you're feeling. And then ask if it's true, in any way serves you. And whatever it is that you are feeling, whatever your response is, the next question is, how do you work that out? What's the thing that's being worked out? What is the thing that's being exchanged? Because the eighth, one of the most distinctive qualities about the eighth, which again for you is Capricorn, where there is Saturn and Pluto and a Centaur, Curriculo, and a very unusual conjunction of two of the newer discoveries. None of these are asteroids. They're all, much slower moving points, Quasar and Pholus. Some of these things, take a century or more to go around the zodiac. Is what's being exchanged? What is the nature of this relationship from the standpoint of what is being exchanged? What do you feel you have to offer? What do you actually, in fact, offer? What do you need? What are others offering? Are they doing so generously? Are you doing so generously? What is the nature of the, let's say, the shared economy of emotions, of sex, of money, of trust, of commitment? What is that about? And the deeper question is, how do you feel about that? And once you identify what's being exchanged and identify how you feel about what's being exchanged, the next question is, what action do you take? Where do you go? What action is the fruit of your knowledge? A lot of this has to do with ultimately what you think you are, what you think a person is, and what you think another person is, and how you think that people are supposed to relate to one another. And I would propose that this is all up for grabs, that there is a reshuffling of all of these different properties going on, and that it is possible to miss it because it's happening in frames of your life that you take for granted. Possibly your approach to relationships, intimate partnerships, your set of expectations. Do you identify that you have expectations, and do you trace them to their source? Where did that idea come from? Whatever that idea might be. What is the role of a man or a woman in your life? Where does that idea come from? What are you told about this? And then do you believe it? And when you are responding, reacting, making choices, are you really being you, or do you feel like you're put into a role? And I would suggest that if you're in sync with your astrology, you're coming out of wanting to be in a role and emerging into wanting to be a person. As I suggested at the beginning of this presentation, it is not easy for you right now to grasp onto tangible specifics, for example, goals in life. You may have some, but your astrology is somewhat of a cautionary tale about the potentially nebulous, as in unclear or formative, since nebulae are where stars form, right? They just seem like these kind of gas clouds, but they're really, well, they are. But then stars are born in many of them. But the goal part of your chart is nebulous, and the personal identification part, like your sense of who you are, is also a little nebulous, but it's mostly leaning in the direction of surviving. And there is just this hint of paranoia that's coming from a kind of insecurity. And I will tell you that if you're feeling this, you might check if that insecurity is not associated with the question of what is it that you want to accomplish the most? What is it that you really need to do? And the answer can't be something like, I want to help people, or I want to be creative. It has to be more like, I want to take my EMT training and help people by being an EMT. Or I want to do something creative, therefore I'm going to do my job more creatively, or I'm going to clear out the junk room in my house and turn it into an art studio. So it's not a goal unless you can connect it to specific developments, tasks, actions that you want. And this is one of those places where you're a little bit slippery, and the thing that's a little bit slippery is your self-concept, and this is what can make you susceptible to getting involved in power struggles that involve other people or quests for things that you're not sure even exist. So there is an answer to this, and as I think with many things these days, the answer is found in an introspective orientation. If you listen through the signs, there are some where I focus on this much more than on others. You might find your fellow air sign Aquarius, which I just completed, to be useful in that way. And the thing that you have in common with Aquarius is that the 12th house of your chart is very active. So to state this in a succinct way, the chart's divided into 12 houses, and the houses describe environments. Those environments translate directly into places, and one of the ways you're in houses, you know certain things about its placeness, and you can say, well, there's a healing table and a practitioner, and it's there's incense burning, or you know, whatever, a little steamy water making it smell good, and maybe I'm in a healing room. Oh, that's the sixth house. So every house has that, except for one, which I guess has some physical locations, but for the most part, it is a conceptual space, an interior space, and it serves as a parallel reality to the one that we are in. And it is best described as a kind of a dream plane, as a plane of consciousness that partially merges with our own. For example, you know, in that time before you wake up and like, you know, you're coming out of sleep and you're fully aware of a dream. And so there's a bleed through from the dream plane into the current plane, the normal waking consciousness, the more cerebral plane of reality. And this overlap is a very significant thing for you. And one of the things that it is a trailhead into the deeper realms of your awareness. And what you are likely to find there is that there is something much more tangible and solid than when you merely are exploring through social relationships or environments, whether virtual or real, or relationship situations that certainly seem tangible but can be fraught with power dynamics that might have a way of distracting you from who you are inside and from the profound inner journey that you are on right now. And so I'm proposing that you, I don't know who you are, but that you take little vacations from the dynamics of your intimate relationships and the dynamics of your social relationships, because both of these can keep bringing you in, right? They can keep drawing you into them and away from something essential that you are wanting, needing time for, desiring to learn about yourself for the purpose of having access to your true self-creativity, right? I mean, we might ask what the purpose of life is. And is it, you know, a big test? Are we here to learn? Is it an experiment? Or are we in some kind of bizarre purgatory where we're, you know, whatever, there's all kinds of great science fiction about this. Or are we here to learn how to be co-creators with universe? And I would say that the least dogmatic view and the least pressurized view, perhaps for most or some people, I don't know, this could be a lot of pressure for others, is that we're here to learn to be co-creators. We're here to take up our role as co-creators. And a lot of that is about the creation of who we are. Rather than living with having who we are imposed upon us. And so to make that translation, that shift in orientation, which is ultimately a shift in your orientation on your existence, the first place to look is into your own reality. And this, I think, would probably be helped by using your physical body as a kind of a map to consciousness, and understanding the ways in which your physicality, the integrity of your physical being, may be compromised by certain factors in your intimate partnerships and certain factors in your social interactions, which include whatever this internet thingy is doing to us. And so there's a real magnetism to return into, first of all, the sanctity of your own mind, and to return, like, not even the mind, like a deeper kind of seat of the soul, and to use your physical body as a vehicle for that, as I said, as a kind of a map, you know, and the map can be like, okay, I have the following body parts. What role do they have? Who owns them? Do I feel like I owe anyone any particular part of my physical body? Is there anything that I have leased out? I mean, and this may be, you know, the sensation of having, like, leased out your voice and your hands because you're a professional musician and you're deeply involved with that. It may involve the sensation of having leased out certain areas of your body because you have certain responsibilities in marriage, whatever it might be. You know, plenty of people feel like they have to, you know, rent themselves or put themselves up for sale for the jobs they do, including various forms of being, you know, slaves to the corporate system. Okay, so mind as thing oriented inwardly and body as map. You can even draw a picture of yourself and where does that part go? Who has claim over that? How is it possible that I could be divided in any way? And when you get consistent with the looking within and using the body as a map, I think you're likely to make some genuinely deep discoveries. What I'm describing is the sign Taurus. Taurus is the 12th house in your chart. So Gemini is this fabulously articulate mental energy field. Taurus is a dominantly physical energy field, but it can have a very mental expression, probably through Gemini. And I'm suggesting that you take the step backwards and seek within yourself for your true knowledge and understanding. And when you do, you're going to find one or more very powerful teaching voices. There are inner teachers that are one in place.
Additional
that
thought
possess maybe. Actual
a couple
wisdom of the ages.
There is a
that are
challenge
here
presented
to help you
in your
wake up,
seeking
your
professional aspirations.
This is mostly about what appears to be either a lack of clarity on your part or lack of confidence, or being a bit idealistic and not practical. I think it's very important to pursue your dreams. And it's also important not to pursue them from a state of surviving. In other words, if you, you know, quit your job and go out in the world and decide you're going to survive as a sculptor, for most people these days, that's not going to be too good for their sculpture. Now, there are those people like Jerry Garcia who were born to do what they do. You really can't imagine him doing anything else but what he did. You can't imagine Jerry Garcia, the general contractor, Jerry Garcia, the record producer. He may be one of the only rock stars who never produced somebody's record album. I think he just wanted to do his thing and make music, and the smaller the venue, the better.
And so if you have that thing that you know that you were born to do, then that's the thing to do. However, there's a challenge in terms of gaining the clarity that you need to know what that thing is. And what I would suggest in this condition, this state, is that first of all, you experiment and find out what really draws your attention in a compelling way. The second thing I suggest is that you engage with people, that you spend a lot of time amongst people, and that you listen to what they say and observe the way in which they seem to negotiate their destiny. There is information forthcoming here. And you may need to go somewhere or engage in a social scene a lot of times before you start to map it out a little bit and see where people are coming from. I'm doing a story on minor league baseball. I'm now at the end of my second season of going to games. I went to a number of games in the 2018 season, got approved for a press card, and now I've been to maybe about 15 games in the 2019 season. And by the end of the season, I started to feel at home in the place I was and started to map out the social relationships and something of the power structure and the relationship to the managers and the owners and the baseball and the team and all this stuff. This is 11th house work. There's some reputation building, but it's informal reputation building, since it's not about demonstrating the work that you can do. It's informal reputation building in that it's based on personal relationships, establishing personal relationships. And many of the best things in your life right now are going to come from the personal friendly relationships that you have. And these are 11th house type relationships, which means that they're typically going to be out of the house. They're going to be within contained environments. For example, using minor league baseball as an example, it's a stadium that holds like 5,000 people, and usually there's like 1,500 to 3,000 people there. And the management team is so small that I've gotten to know, at least meet and speak with, every member of the management team. And so this is the way you want to navigate social networks. And through navigating social networks, you are likely to find a calling, which is another way of saying discover something about yourself. And so this is not the usual form of I want to accomplish this great thing and I'm going to succeed no matter what. What I suggest you do is you set aside those kinds of ambitions and instead, first of all, focus on social exploration with a keen ear for the way in which others find their way. All of the activity in Capricorn is in the eighth, suggestive of learning negotiation skills. Learning negotiation skills almost always means learning how to negotiate with those you perceive as having more power than you do, because typically they have something that you want, and that gives them power. And so learning negotiation skills means learning how to operate within the framework of the power that other people seem to have. The third thing that's necessary is navigating the rather fraught territory of sex and gender in a graceful way and in a way that is non-threatening to others, whether you are male or female. This is a dominant theme in your charts right now, and it's coming from a number of different angles, and I can go over them if you'd like to consider the metaphors and, you know, perhaps listen back to some of the ideas I've offered. But the Capricorn alignment is happening in the eighth house, and the eighth house is the house where basically power is brokered, sometimes inherited, and sometimes won through contention and controversy like probate court. But the question of the eighth is, what is this power and where does it come from? And you need to know what your power is. Many people will tell you that they don't have any. That is a dangerous delusion. It is a dangerous delusion because if you convince yourself you don't have power, you will not have access to the power that you have. If you decide that you have sexual power and that's a bad thing, then you will be denying your power again. If you decide that you have power over people that can some way be leveraged through some form of a threat, that is inherently toxic and will never get anyone anywhere except, you know, 5 minutes of world fame on a good day. And so the question is, what is your power? Is it your talent? Is it your compelling quality? Is it your knowledge? What is it exactly that you have to offer? And on the whole, we have mainly three things we can sell, which is our labor, our time, and our ideas. Except that there's a third thing as well, and that is the power of our personality. Whatever it is about your nature that's compelling in some way. And this, I think, is an understated, underutilized, not taught about enough ability. And I suggest you work on a personal assessment of whether you're selling your labor, your time, your ideas, or your compelling self. Which is it going to be? Which are you the happiest doing? And what do you actually have to offer? And as a parallel question, where does your power come from? And how do you use it? And when you perceive someone else as having power over you, where does that come from? And so while you're in a moment where you're not necessarily being, compelled to be ambitious about some specific great goal, that you explore socially and you explore in the intricate realm of that sensitive space where people negotiate and work out an arrangement, work out a balance. This is also going to serve you when there is something in a personal relationship that comes up where it seems as if someone has more power. And what I'm proposing here is that you be adept at doing power analysis, and that the power analysis go past any crude raw power analysis and get to the sublime level of what you feel and what the people around you feel, and that you bring an ethos of serving the greatest good for all concerned. You have the ability to make sure that no one gets hurt. You have the ability to minimize the harm if you can't make sure that nobody gets hurt. And you have the power to guide things in a positive direction. But this is not power over. This is mostly the benefit of human awareness, of inhabiting your understanding of what people are about, your understanding of the common needs that people have, and I think most significantly an understanding of what you have to offer, and then observe yourself and see if you really are willing to share that thing. It's a lot of people being possessive of their own talents and feeling like they're not going to give it up unless the price is right. And very few people who have found their joy and their success have done so by holding out for the right price. The joy has to be in the doing and the experiment of doing. And I think more than anything, when our work involves others, which it seems yours often does, particularly given the nature of the eighth house, which always brings people into your life, and the 11th house, which always brings people into your life, that you need to love the people around you, the place where you go to work every day, including it being your own home, and you work with people on Skype or whatever it might be. The goodwill, the love, the respect that you have is the environment that you live in, and it's also going to have a lot to do with how you feel about yourself, which is a challenge, I think, for everyone these days. And you tend to go through distinct cycles of how you feel about yourself, and whether you are willing to give yourself the respect that you deserve and the opportunities that you deserve. There's a lot about that, by the way, in the Aquarius reading on the nature of self-esteem. Gemini has a lot in common with Aquarius. And for you, this phase of, it's all about power, and where everything seems to come down to a question of power and somebody being compelled. I mean, that's much of the nature of the eighth house with Pluto and Saturn there. Good heavens. This is not actually a valid model of humanity when it is actually expressing itself in a humane way. And you have the potential to do that. You, as the first of the human signs, are gifted with the opportunity to be human and teach by example what it means to be human. And I do promise you that you have to be strong to do that. And I think you are. Thanks for listening. Do check out your rising sign if you have access to it. The nature of my readings tends to structure around the houses, which I'm sure you figured out. And so therefore, the rising sign contains additional information. And I look forward to working with you a little further down the road on the respect reading, the 2020-2021 annual forthcoming. All right. Thanks for hanging out and for being thoughtful. And you know to reach me at EFC at bookofblue.com, and I'll catch you a little further down the journey. Bye for now.